This is the Bates Bobcast, our weekly podcast about the week that was in Bates Athletics. My name is Aaron Morse, and this week we're launching our Bates Athletics Hall of Fame interview series, as the first class was inducted on Saturday. Plus, our Bobcats of the Week come from the nationally ranked field hockey and men's soccer programs. All that and more coming up on the Bates Bobcast. The Bates football team lost a 13-6 overtime heartbreaker to Colby last Saturday under the lights in front of a packed house at Garcelon Field. The Bobcats appeared to have the game won, but an offsides call negated a missed Colby field goal at the end of regulation, giving the Mules another chance. The second attempt was good, forcing overtime. Colby was able to score a touchdown on their possession and break up three passes on Bates' possession to secure the win. Head coach Matt Coyne looks back on a night that saw the defense shine, but the offense struggle. I mean, coach, obviously a frustrating game. I mean, you basically had the game won, but the offsides call. There's not much more you can really say about that. But overall, I mean, you have to be happy with how the defense played in that game. It's just both units to play at the same time, the same level, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, first and foremost, I think it's easy on the outside for everybody to look at this and say, oh, if you don't fumble on that last drive, if you don't go offsides, if the refs make some calls, you know, I think that's always the outside looking in, but internally, like, those are just components of the game. There's a lot of other things that make it up. So, you know, those kids know the mistakes made, but other kids made mistakes throughout it. I made mistakes. Our coaches made mistakes. We all have to learn from it, grow from it. That's really the next step. I thought the defense played outstanding. And I thought, you know, that was the style of game we knew it was going to be. Like, we played that game to be a low-scoring affair that we were going to, you know, really duke it out and win it in a fashion where we thought it would be, you know, 20-3, 20-10. Like, that's really what we planned as a staff. And, you know, we were in a position and we didn't, you know, make those critical plays and those critical moments. So defense played lights out. You know, I thought offensively we did some really nice things. There was not a lot of three and outs. We just, you know, couldn't sustain and finish. And again, it comes down to a few first downs where we get negative plays and then we're setting ourselves back. And again, you know, as you know, when we have these shot plays that people are open on, it's one block off and we're missing a protection or we don't see it or, you know, X, Y, Z. So it's just this, it's a, we got to continue to make the critical plays in the critical moments. And that's a new, you know, situation for this team.
What do you say to some of those guys, you know, who maybe made mistakes later in the game that, hey, it's not on you. This is a team effort, right?
Yeah. I always say it to them, and I said it to them in the pregame, guys, like, it's on me as the head coach. You know, I take that, you know, and I know that's cliche and metaphorical and all that stuff, but it's the truth. Any head coach that goes out there and stands on the sidelines, you're responsible for your boys, you know. And for me, like, we got to harp on these things and practice more. You know, we've got to practice harder. We've got to, you know, emphasize some things more than we thought we have, take those steps. And I think what I talked to the team about was, like, those guys feel terrible, and obviously they will. And it's a tough loss, obviously. Rivalry game, high emotions, big crowd, like, you know, you play your tails off and it doesn't go your way. But, you know, what are you going to do? It's like, you know, the teams that continue to progress, we're going to be in these moments more. And how do we learn from it? Because we're a good team. And now we know, we feel that confidence, you know, internally we know it. And that's all that matters. It's like, how do, when we get in that situation again, when we have the lead, we finish it, you know, and that's the era of this program that we haven't had a lot of experience in. We've had some, you know, surprise wins, some, you know, being underdogs and stuff like that. But as we continue to get better and we become a really good team, now it's how do you finish games off? And that's some uncharted territory for our staff and our players that we have to continue to get better at.
A couple interceptions for the defense. We touched on how well they played. I mean, you had Marquez Narvaez-Estrada get his first career interception at Bates, and then Major Spencer got a pick too, right? What did you see from those guys?
Yeah, I think, the DBs, I thought overall played outstanding. You know, they really found a level of confidence in the man-to-man coverage, you know, going against a really good receiver that they have in Jack Nye. We held him, I think, to one catch. I think it was one catch in the first quarter, you know, a hitch ball. And then really limiting them to, you know, on outside of that last drive, they were at 41 plays. And then it was an 18-play drive where they converted a few fourth downs. And, you know, so the defense really played outstanding. You know, we played well on special teams to situationally change the field positions and play to the tempo of the game. You know, I thought, you know, Major made some unbelievable plays in the secondary, like all of them did. You know, Marquez really stepped up and took a next step. And, you know, I think across the board defensively, I was very pleased, and especially with Brooks Potter and Liam Keeney, two freshmen
right there. Yeah, Potter was stepping in a starting role. What do you see, you know, from him?
Those two kids are going to be outstanding players. You know, you could see it already. They're two freshmen out there. And you think about it, and Sammy and Marquez, are two sophomores out there. You know, you got, you know, majority of these guys that are going to be back for a little while here. But Brooks and Liam are studs. That's why we recruited them here. That's why they're, you know, in this moment. And you're just going to deal with some minor mistakes, you know, because they are first years that are out there. And you have to live with that, but understand that the experience that they just got in that type of atmosphere now, you know, you compound on that, and they're only going to grow from there.
It was quite the atmosphere. I mean, fans were packed in the bleachers and also all the way around the field. What was it like to coach in that environment also?
Yeah, you know, it's weird because you don't really feel it. It's you're so locked in. Yeah. You're sitting there, and it's, you know, sometimes as a coach, it's like you're just hoping for the best. You know what I'm saying? You make the call, and you've prepared your guys, and you're just sort of there trying to support them, motivate them, keep them you know, emotionally engaged and level. But it was an awesome environment. I mean, I think that's what we're going to create here as we continue to get better. And, you know, these results are going to change. And, you know, it still stings because the ultimate goal is to win the football game. And we felt we did everything there. But you gotta make critical plays in critical moments. And, you know, the big thing is from here, it's like I said to the team, it's easy to point the finger at all these things and say, oh, well, we should have won. Well, guess what? We didn't. All right, what are we going to do from here? Are we going to grow and get better and now go down to Tufts into their environment? And like, there's no better place I'd want to be. Is on the road, underdog, us against them, us against the whole crowd. Like, let's just get back out there and play ball, you know, because that's the only way to make sort of those feelings go away.
Marcos Ruiz, a new career long for him, over 40 yards there, 41-yarder, also made a 38-yarder. I mean, how far what's his range limit here? I mean, he's moving back.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, with Marcos, another kid that just, you know, he has that factor. You know, he goes in the game and he's thinking, I'm going to make this, not what if I miss. You know, he just has that type of demeanor. We're very lucky to have him. I think, you know, we could keep stretching that back. You know, who knows? You know, I'm comfortable putting him out there in certain situations where I feel like, hey, like, you know, end of halves, end of games, where it's not going to really hurt you if it doesn't go the way you think it's going to go, then taking a shot, you know, in the deeper 40s. You know, because he has a good leg, but he's very accurate, he's very reliable, and, you know, you don't really realize that till it's gone. So I'm appreciating that we have that right now while he's still with us.
And Parker's having a nice senior year punting, isn't he?
100%. Yeah. And I think Parker, you know, he's been through the whirlwind, as we all know, and he's very aware of it. And, you know, another kid that self-reflected and understood that he had to get better. And you know, he's really taken that approach as an upperclassman now to say, hey, like, I'm going to be able to – those experiences, and you go through them, and it's very easy for him to have packed it in because he didn't punt well one or two games, or he had some bad punts here and there. Like, so what? And, you know, he's one of the better punters in the league, and, you know, he's had an unbelievable season, and it's really helped us, you know, in these games, special teams-wise.
Vadu and Carver, I felt like, were effective running it to the outside, even though they're technically receivers running the ball to the outside on the option. It seems like they are maybe one or two blocks away from really a big play here and there, right?
Yeah, I mean, you notice what we notice on film. Yeah. You know, so, 11 and 24, Quinn and Jeff have a different speed to them. You can see them, and obviously they're gaining more confidence now being sophomores. You know, they're you know, we're really happy with how they performed, and you can start to see the swagger come from them. One or two blocks away, but it's like those are our chunk plays. Like, you know, we had a bunch of those 12 to 13 yard chunk plays in the triple. So those to us act the same way as a 10 yard out, you know, and so for them, we got to find more ways to get them the ball, obviously, because when the ball touches their hands, it's, you know, special things happen. We've already seen it in the return game with Quinn. And if you watch Jeff block all game too, like, Jeff is, you know, he puts it all out there. You know, he is a very, reliable player. Cares about his teammates, cares about, you know, everybody in the program. So, you know, really those two guys. But, you know, the whole group, you know, fights their butt off out there blocking the receivers. So we're really excited. You know, Matty Holmes comes down with another big catch. I mean, he's as reliable as they come. Gleason's blocking his butt off out there, and, all of them.
I did want to ask about the final drive in overtime. You guys got down to the 10-yard line, had some shots to the end zone. Colby had some tight coverage. I mean, what did you kind of see there? What was the learning experience maybe the next time you're in that type of situation, I guess?
Yeah, we took some shots on some of the man-to-man matchups. Yeah. You know, we liked our matchups, and, you know, we wanted to find a play, you know, and really, for us, we wanted to try to create separation. you know, I'm not going to get into what we see out there, and the coverage was tight, and there's things like that.
Right.
But it is what it is. You can't put it in their hands. That's the bottom line. You know, I will say I've never been a part of really a game where there's not been one offensive or defensive penalty called on the other team, but you got to fight through that. You know, that's just me, you know, sort of venting still. But to me, it's like, you know, follow what you preach. You know, you can't put it in their hands. So you got to create separation. You got to make a play. And we had two jump balls that, you know, we thought we could come down with. We didn't. And, you know, at that point, we were third and long, and it's tough because, you know, it's four down territory, and they were crowding the box and just blitzing seven and playing straight man, you know, so that's really what they were going to do from that 10-yard in. I think you always can second guess it. We liked our matchups. We're going to go with our matchups. We didn't make the plays, and we lose. So that's really what it comes down to.
For Jack Perry, what's kind of the next step for him here? He had some good moments, I thought, the other day, just made some missed opportunities also.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of it was, you know, we were running the ball well, you know, mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it, is like we were really gashing him in the run game. I think early on there were some opportunities in the RPO game that he saw that, like, we could have taken to get into the game. We took those a little bit later, and it sort of loosened up. But, you know, you just got to continue to develop. You know, I think the gameplay of what we wanted to do there was to really run the ball and sustain drives, and we felt we could move on them and really bring our physicality back that we lacked, you know, week three against Wesleyan. And we did that. And now it's just, you know, how do we continue to find those areas in that green zone, I call it, right before the red zone, where we can find some explosives and we can find some of those shot plays. And that comes from us developing the right plays and making sure that we're comfortable with that as a quarterback and receivers and O-line. And so it's holistic. I don't think it's anything on Jack. I think the style of game we wanted to play was we were going to put the ground game together, and then we needed to find those little shot plays. And what people don't see is on some of the shot plays where we get pressure on, it's there and we can't get it off because, you know, so it's a combination. So we just got to – it's four or five plays. We got to continue to grind through it, get better. But ultimately, you know, it starts with myself and trickles down through our staff and our players, and we know.
Initial thoughts on Tufts, what you've seen?
A good team. You know, good team. They play a ton of man. You know, they are obviously going through a bit of a quarterback carousel right now, but still all good players. You know, they're good up front. I think, you know, they're going to try to run the ball, you know, and so for us defensively, it's the physicality we have to be able to handle and impose ours as well. Obviously, the atmosphere down there, 7 p.m. at their place, night game, like, you know, that shouldn't bother us. You know, I'll be disappointed if it does, to be quite honest. So we'll prepare for that all week. Defensively, you know, not as big, but very quick and athletic, you know, and so they do a ton of stuff up front. So for us, I think, you know, we got to come out and build momentum early. That's the biggest thing I'm preaching this week, is how do we build momentum early, offensively, defensively, and special teams-wise, and settle into a road night game.
All right, Matt Coyne, thanks so much.
Thank you.
The field hockey team is 9-1 on the season after the Bobcats defeated then number 7 nationally ranked Williams 2-1 on Saturday before falling to 10th ranked Hamilton 2-1 on Sunday. Bates is tied for first with Tufts in the NESCAC standings, and the Bobcats are still ranked 5th in the country by the National Field Hockey Coaches Association. Sophomore Rose Gordon scored the game-winning goal against the Eves, her first collegiate tally, and she is our female Bobcat of the week. Happy to have sophomore midfielder Rose Gordon with us here on the Bobcast, our female Bobcat of the Week game-winning goal against Williams there on Saturday. Rose, before we start talking about the games and the season so far, tell me a little bit about yourself. Obviously, you have an older sister, Summer, who's on the team. Growing up in Massachusetts, tell me a little bit about how you both kind of got into field hockey. I imagine you're sort of following in her footsteps. How'd that kind of go?
Yeah, so I actually have three sisters, and we both started playing field hockey because of my older sister, Emma. She started when she was in sixth grade, and then my three younger sisters and I just started with her. We used to play with baseball bats in the backyard because we didn't have field hockey sticks. But yeah, so ever since then, all four of us started playing field hockey, and it's just been awesome. It's been so fun playing field hockey with Summer here, and yeah, so fun.
So tell me a little about why field hockey for you. Like, what makes it your favorite sport, if you will?
Oh my goodness. It's so fun. I love just the connection part of field hockey, and the passing is something that I truly just love about it. And also how there's a lot of mistakes that can be made in field hockey, but how quickly you can just turn a mistake into something that benefits you, and how you can quickly just get the ball back and turn something not so good into something good.
Tell me a little about when you're looking at colleges. Summer was already here. It was Bates a no-brainer, or were you thinking about, maybe I don't want to go to the same place? How does that kind of go?
Yeah, so actually at first, I was like, I don't think I want to go in the same college as Summer. But then when I was looking at colleges and visiting Summer and going to her games, I was like, I can't picture myself somewhere else other than here. And yeah, so Bates was one of the only like colleges at the end I was looking at.
Got to play right away as a midfielder last year. What was that experience like? You'd be such a big contributor right off the bat.
It was very exciting. A little nerve-wracking at first to come in to such an amazing team with such great group of girls. But everyone was so supportive last year and just really helpful for me as a first year. And yeah, it's just been awesome to be that person to the first years this year too.
Now, your position on the field is very interesting because you don't necessarily get to compile the big stats all the time, but you're a key to the team going from, you know, defense to offense and whatnot. Tell me about your role specifically.
Yeah, so in the midfield, our role is just to help the defense and the defending 25 and also the offense and attacking 25, but also to get the ball from those two 25s. So our main goal is just to pass, receive the ball, pass to someone else, and just make those connections along the midfield.
Well, you picked the perfect time to get your first collegiate goal.
So exciting.
Take us through that play.
Yeah, so there's about like 8 minutes left in the last quarter, and we've had like three or four corners at this point back to back. So my first initial shot got blocked by the defender, but then I saw an open lane on my left, so I did a little pull and reverse shot, and Elsa did a great job of screening the goalie, so we just went right into the goal, which is awesome.
Yeah, because it's interesting. On those shots, sometimes, you know, you have players trying to tip it in, but other times you're just trying to make the goalie so they can't see, right?
Yes. Elsa does a great job on the pads there and just, like, blocks the goalie's vision.
And then, I mean, for the team, obviously off to a 9-1 start. Tell me about what's been really clicking for the team as a whole, you think.
Ooh, I would say our connection on the field has just been something that's just been so awesome this year. We're super close off the field, but that's been translated into our playing on the field. We're very supportive of each other and just want to succeed and work hard each day. So I think that's awesome. Also, our forwards are super fast. So they have so much amazing potential and they cause so much opportunities down in the circle, which is super exciting for us.
Great. And then you're a psychology major. Tell me about your interest in that field.
Yeah. So that's something I got interested to back in high school. I took like a psych class and just something that I find really interesting, just like the way the brain works and how that affects everyone.
I believe the team is working with Sue Langdon, right?
Yes,
she's a sports psychologist. Tell me about that, because that must be particularly interesting for you.
Oh, that's been so interesting. She meets with us, our team, once a week and just comes in with so much wisdom and just tells us all about sports psychology and how that can apply to us and just ways to control our emotions for that can have the best effect on the field, which has been awesome. And yeah, sports psychology is something like I'm kind of interested in the future. So it's just super cool to work with someone who's just so awesome.
How do you think it's helped your game specifically, I guess?
Oh, a lot. Sometimes like I can get in my head during sometimes, or it's sometimes a lot going from practice right to field hockey. So just the tips that she gives us to control our other feelings and emotions at practice is super helpful. And then just like little cueing words when we're playing just to get out of our heads and lock back in, which is super helpful as well.
Looking at the schedule here, obviously, this past weekend was interesting because I believe, I'm double-checking my work here, yeah, it was your first back-to-back, right? Mm-hmm. So what did you kind of learn from that experience? Because you hadn't had that yet this year, at least.
Yes, it's very tiring going from two games in a row, especially two such big games. But just the teams played very differently, so just adjusting to those different styles in-game was a little difficult at first as we struggled with that a little bit in the Hamilton game, but quickly was able to adjust that on halftime too.
So now you play at Tufts this Saturday. No pressure or anything. The winner is in first place probably in the NESCAC. What are your thoughts? And obviously Tufts was a thorn in the side last year for Bates.
Yeah, so really excited. We played them three times last year, so really want to win and just going to work really hard this week, take what we learned from a Hamilton loss and just take that to get 1% better each day and hopefully win.
Well, I was going to say, like, you can learn more from a loss than a win, mm-hmm. right? What do you think the team really learned from that experience?
Yeah, I would just say that in the first half, we just came out a little short and weren't able to connect the ball. So, like, watching film from that and just practicing those things that we can improve will definitely help us this weekend.
Great. Well, any other thoughts on the season so far? Anything else you wanted to share we haven't got to talk about yet?
No, just super excited. The season's been awesome. It's been a great group of girls and just just having so much fun.
Excellent. Rose Gordon, the game-winning goal against Williams on Saturday as the Bobcats are still ranked fifth in the country heading into a big showdown at Tufts this Saturday. Female Bobcat of the Week, thanks so much.
Thank you.
The men's soccer team is 7-2-1 and ranked 16th in the country by the United Soccer Coaches after a week that saw the Bobcats defeat Husson 3-0, fall to now number one nationally ranked Williams 1-0, and defeat Hamilton 2-0. First year, Luke Cunniff scored his first goal in NESCAC play in the 2-0 win over the Continentals, and he leads the Bobcats with 10 points so far this season. And Luke Cunniff is our male Bobcat of the Week. Well, Luke, first of all, before we talk about the men's soccer season so far, you're from Maine, Wyndham.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about growing up, how you first got into like competitive soccer, and what made you end up coming to Bates.
Growing up in Wyndham, there's a ton of like youth opportunities to play. So I basically just played for my dad and then played for the high school when I got older. During my time in high school, I met Coach Brewster playing for my club team, and I ended up coming here visiting, and I really liked it. So I decided I wanted to be here.
So your dad's a soccer coach?
Yeah, he coached me when I was like 9 to whenever I got to high school.
Gotcha. What was that experience like?
That was really good. You can tell sometimes, like, he's definitely a coach because my parents are so loud on the sidelines. They just want to coach, but, you know, I have to tell him to please be quiet, but it's all good.
So they're the loudest voices. We can hear them then.
Definitely,
the yeah.
Always.
So your first year in college soccer, tell me about maybe the biggest difference between playing college soccer and playing, you know, high school or club.
Yeah, it's definitely way different. The biggest difference is just the physicality and size of the guys. Like, all these guys are, you know, you're playing against grown men, so you kind of gotta get bigger. But our freshmen we've been good this year. But I know Brewster has an off-season lifting plan for us, so that'll get us locked in for next year.
Yeah, it seems like you and Chris Bianco have really, especially up front, have had a big impact. What's it not like to have, you know, two rookies like yourselves doing so well?
It's honestly really nice. Like, me and Chris, we text and we talk a lot. Our whole freshman class is, like, extremely close. So it's kind of like everyone just wants the best for each other. So anyone's win is, like, a win for everyone, it feels. So it's really nice.
Well, you got your first goal in NESCAC play against Hamilton the other day in a 2-0 win for the Bobcats. Take us through that play.
Yeah, so we won the ball, like, around half field. And Zach Perrone, I was yelling for it all game. I was just telling him to, like, pass me the ball out wide. And he hit the ball in. I was like one-on-one with their right back, and I don't know, he tried to slide, but I ended up getting the ball, and I was like one-on-one with the keeper, and then I just finished. Then me and Tony hit the DJ after.
What's the DJ?
Oh, you gotta ask Tony.
Okay. That's Antonio Mesa.
Yeah.
Well, the Bobcats are 7-2-1 overall, and the thing that's really standing out to me is you've outscored your opponents 22-3. So what's made this team so good so far, in your opinion?
Yeah, honestly, like, we've had good results this year, but I think it's just the camaraderie and, like, close-knit team environment we have. Everyone just wants the best for everyone else, and I feel like that's the things the upperclassmen are preaching to us is – just the overall environment of the team and the culture of the program has shifted, and honestly, for the best. Everyone just wants to see everyone else win, so everyone's just willing to work hard in practice and games to help each other out.
It's interesting because the team went from unranked to 13th in the country just, like, right away. Like,
yeah.
The rankings, they fluctuate, to say the least. But what was that like to see that up on the board?
It was cool. You know, Coach says, you know, rankings don't matter.
Right.
It's nice to be recognized, but, you know, you just got to keep looking forward and, you know, look at the next game, try to get a result.
Well, speaking of Coach, what have you learned from Coach Brewster so far?
Coach Brewster, yeah, he's one of my favorite coaches I ever had. He just puts, like, a confidence in you. Like, you can see it with all the freshmen. Usually come in timid and scared, but he's, like, instilled a confidence in us that, you know, you're going to make mistakes, stuff's going to happen, but, you know, if you just are yourself and you play, go to his game plan, everything will be all good.
What's been the most memorable match or moment for you so far this season?
I would say the most memorable match would have to be our boating game.
Mm-hmm.
It was just all the guys were I'm first year, so I don't really know too much, but all the guys were saying that was like the best game they've had throughout their 4 years, and just the overall, like, just the vibes in the locker room after everything was just, it was just so electric. It was fun.
I'm curious, because you're obviously being a Mainer growing up. I mean, how familiar were you with this kind of rivalry up north a little bit from Wyndham?
Yeah, like you know about it, but you don't really know, like, how deep it goes until, like, you actually get to be part of it, which is super fun to play in. So that was good.
Yeah, certainly. Well, a lot of first years don't know what they're majoring. You're definitely majoring in economics. What do you think?
I think so. Yeah. I'm still deciding.
Yeah.
I've talked to some of the older guys, but it's still definitely up in the air.
Have you always been a forward, like up playing up front, or have you moved around a bit?
Yeah, I've always been a forward. Yeah. For high school, especially in Maine, you know, you just put the players in the midfield. So that's where I played in high school. But everywhere else, I played on the wing. I've always played on the wing. It's what I enjoy.
And then this past weekend, you had back-to-back matches. And the first one, obviously, Williams is one of the top teams in the country, at least according to the fluctuating rankings. But that was a battle, wasn't it? And then you were able to come back and get a win the next day. What was that like playing back-to-back there?
Yeah, that game, the Williams game, was a battle. It was really nice to have the quick turnaround because we didn't get a result in that game. But thankfully, we had the game the very next day to, you know, change the picture and, you know, get a result, a new opportunity. And getting the win against Hamilton was honestly huge for us to get something out of the doubleheader weekend.
Yeah, certainly. Well, the Bobcats are at Tufts this Saturday at 12:30. Their next home match is October 18th when they host Connecticut College. Luke, any other thoughts you wanted to share on the season so far you wanted to mention we haven't got to talk about yet?
Nah, nothing really. I'm just enjoying it. Super fun.
There you go. Yeah. Luke Cunoff, our male Bobcat of the week, for his first goal in NASCAC play, part of a 2-0 win over Hamilton on Sunday. Again, the Bobcats are 7-2-1. Really having a great season and at Tufts this Saturday. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bates College held its first annual Hall of Fame induction ceremony Saturday morning, welcoming the first class in style in front of a packed house at the Gray Cage. You can watch the full ceremony at GoBatesBobcats.com, and throughout the fall, we'll be conducting in-depth interviews with the inductees. We begin today with two-time Olympic medalist Andrew Burns, a men's rower from the class of 2005. Well, Andrew, before we talk about your amazing career at Bates and post-Bates, take us back before Bates, growing up. What sports did you play? How did you first get into rowing?
Not much, and that's maybe why I ended up in rowing and how a lot of people do is they're not particularly talented at any other sports. Basketball wasn't my thing, even though I was 6'5 in high school. Played a little bit of tennis, but I was kind of just barely making the bottom of the team, bottom of the traveling roster for tennis. So I picked up rowing my senior year of high school and kind of found I had a bit of talent for it and it was something that I enjoyed doing. So stuck with it and carried it on when I got here to Bates.
So you had 1 year of rowing experience before you came to Bates.
Less
than a year.
So yeah, one academic year, basically, spring and fall.
Some people are recruited for a sport. What drew you to Bates, though? It sounds like maybe separately from rowing.
I came here because of the academics and the people and the community that was here. Fell in love with that part of the college. And the fact that we had a pretty good rowing team at the time was a bonus. Wasn't the main focus of why I came here, though. You know, we don't admit people, like people don't get heavily recruited on athletic scholarships in Division III, so I was no exception either. I think I got maybe he'd be nice to have from the rowing team, which maybe maybe helped, but like to think that I got in on my own academic accords and stuff. And then, it worked out pretty well, though. I had a good career here for 4 years rowing.
So rowing became a varsity sport at Bates about spring of 99, you know, fall 98, spring of 99. You're here a couple years later, right? So it had really just become a varsity sport. Take us back to what it was like then, I guess.
I like to say, yeah, now that I'm old, it's like, oh yeah, it was a lot harder back in the day. You know, we had the old boathouse with a sand floor and no electricity. You know, we had to start the generator in the morning and brush the ice off the docks. It was pretty good, though. I mean, it was a good program and a serious program, which was nice. And it was different, right? We'd get up at 4:45 in the morning to get in the vans at 5:15 and head out to the boathouse because people had to be back by 8 a.m. classes or 8:30 at the latest. So, it was a lot of early mornings, and it was a challenging sport to be in if you're not a morning person.
Right. Were you a morning person?
Not necessarily.
No, so yeah. That was an adjustment.
Yeah. Although I did do a radio show at WRBC one year, and my dad hated it because I'd be up at – my show was from 2 to 4 a.m.
Right.
And then I'd go back to the dorm and watch TV for half an hour and then go to rowing practice. And of course, when I get up at like 1:30 or 2 to go do my radio show, all my buddies are still awake. You know, they've been partying and stuff like that. And I've had my whole night's sleep and getting on with the next day, and everybody else is still awake.
You lived a bit of a nocturnal life at Bates.
Yeah.
In early mornings.
Yeah, and you get limited sleep, but you know, when you're in college, you don't need a whole lot of sleep. You got things to do. So
yeah, certainly. So it sounds like rowing came pretty naturally to you. What was the biggest thing you had to learn, maybe?
I guess when I came to Bates, one of the things was it was a kind of my first time in a really serious rowing program. And we had a good coach at the time, and he had a really good formal training and developing a program and a training regimen for the group. So it was an eye-awakener for me to be in that kind of a rigorous, competitive program that's planned out with, you know, scientific knowledge and an approach to training over, you know, for a competitive sport like rowing. So,
well, tell us about your coach, because all I know, I've been here 11 years, all I know is Peter Steenstra. So tell us about your coach.
Yeah, that was a fellow named Andrew Carter, who was another Canadian as well. So I had a bit of a rapport with him there on that front. And I think he was pretty instrumental in the early years of the program of getting things off the ground. And as a varsity sport, he wasn't the first varsity rowing coach, I don't think. There was another coach before him who was the first varsity coach. But yeah, he set it off with a pretty formal tone of a program that was serious and disciplined and wanted to achieve good things. And it was a good experience for me.
You mentioned Canadian. Tell me about growing up. Did you grow up in Canada, or like how much time you spent in the U.S., or how'd that work?
I was born in Canada, Canadian citizen by birth, but grew up in Ithaca, New York.
Okay.
And then I've been living, after I graduated from Bates, I moved out to Canada to join the national rowing team and have been living there ever since. So.
Well, I'm curious because, I've read articles about how, or stories about how both the U.S. and Canada wanted you on the team, and you had to decide, right? How did that go?
It was, Canada's a lot smaller country. So
there's a lot fewer
people competing there. Yeah. So I was pretty good in college and at Bates, and my ERG scores were pretty good. But there were 20 other people probably in the U.S. who were at, my age and kind of who were trying out for the team or who were at my level or better. Whereas in Canada, when I was submitting scores, I was a bit more of a standout just by the fact of it being a smaller group.
And obviously, as Team Canada, you went on to great heights. So tell us about your experience competing internationally. How did that first start? Like, was it right out of Bates, or how did that kind of go?
I started at the bottom. Once you graduated from one level, you move into the bottom of the next level.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I tried out for the under 23 team in 2004, which is my first year trying out for the Canadian team, and I didn't make it. I got cut, which was unfortunate and hard to take, but I came back and did a year of a master's degree at University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia and rode there with a club team. And then when I went back to Canada in 2005, I did make the under 23 team. And it's a lot like most sports. There's a development process where you have junior teams under 23, and that leads into senior programs. So spent a year on the under 23 team, and we came away with a bronze medal, which was pretty good because weren't really expected to necessarily do well. And I think our heat, we were fifth out of six, which is not great. And then in the repechage, which is the second chance finishers, we were fourth. So we got one better. We're like, okay, great. And then the final, we ended up getting third. So we improved the whole time throughout the regatta.
And tell me about the Olympic experience. I mean, when did you first find out you were going to go to the Olympics, and then what was the experience like?
When I moved out to Victoria full-time to join the senior team, it was January 2007, and the Olympics were coming up very shortly in 2008. So I was pretty lucky to drop in on a group of really established and knowledgeable and experienced rowers who are already at the training center. A lot of the guys had come off the 2004 Olympics, where they were favored to win and didn't. Mm. So they had a lot of motivation to train hard and put things right in 2008. And I was fortunate to come along and get involved with this group, training under Coach Mike Spracklin. And I was also smart enough to know that I should just put my head down and work hard and keep a little bit quiet. And so that's what I did. And I learned a lot from those people and the people I was training with and from my coach, Mike, out there. And we managed to put together a pretty good eight. In 2007, we went to a few World Cup races, and we ended up winning them all. We then went on to win the World Championships that year in the eight as well. And I think at that point, we knew that we had a good boat and that we were going to keep the same boat together going to the Olympics the next year.
And going to the Olympics was Beijing in 08, right?
Yeah.
Gold medal. I mean, just what most stands out?
It was I mean, a lot of pressure to go into the Olympics as a favorite.
Yeah.
This is the same situation the team had been in 2004. They'd won the World Championships the year before. And it's easy to get distracted with all the hype and excitement that goes along with the Olympics. I mean, it's unlike any rowing race I'd ever been to before. High school, collegiate regattas, even World Championships are, you know, very small events compared to what's going on in the Olympics, where you have so much press presence, media, there's like a carpet everywhere. You know, I like to say that when you're at the Olympics, it's like there's ambient theme music in the air, like everywhere you go, whether you're walking at a bus stop or you're walking to the event or you're leaving a venue or you're in the village, it's like it's very staged and very elaborate production. And it's easy to get swept up in that and intimidated and distracted from what your real goal is, which is what you've done at every other race that you've ever been to, which is you go, you do your warm up, you execute your race plan, and you hope that you perform. So we had a lot of emphasis on being focused through that regatta and not getting swept up in the pageantry that's going on around you. And we managed to come away with a success as a result. But, you know, throughout the Olympics, like leading up to our race, it wasn't, didn't feel like being at the Olympics, to be honest, because it was a lot of being in a hotel room, really. We would go for our rows, we would do our practice, we would rehearse it was a two-week-long build-up, you know, taper and everything, getting ready for a big race like that. So, and in between, when you're not on the water, you're basically in the hotel room, relaxing, sleeping, trying to keep your mind focused.
What about the opening ceremony, though? That must have felt...
We skipped it.
You skipped it? Oh, my goodness. Dedication right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's... in hindsight, I don't regret it at all because, you know, it's the kind of thing where you go to the opening ceremonies and you end up... The buses, it's the traffic jam on the way back. You're not back in your bed till late at night. That affects you for the next few days, right? And that affects your sleep habits and your performance. And we weren't there to go to the opening ceremonies. Right. We were there to go and win a gold medal. And that's what we tried to do.
Were the rowers the only ones who skipped the opening ceremonies from Canada?
I think there's a few number that do skip, especially people who have early events in the schedule.
Closing ceremonies?
Closing, everybody goes.
You went to that?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Beijing especially was, I don't know if you recall, like they had 20,000 people, you know, performers involved in the opening and closing ceremonies, you know, 1,000 drummers drumming all the same thing, all in perfect unison. Like they put a lot of effort into having the spectacle of the opening and closing ceremonies, and it was impressive.
So it sounds like it was definitely a challenge to stay focused, but you guys were locked in from day one, it sounds like.
We didn't want to make any mistakes again, right? Like 2004 had been that. They got there and they stumbled. They didn't perform where they wanted to, so we weren't taking any chances.
And then you go again, 2012, and silver medal. Was that disappointment or silver medal is pretty good?
2012 was a whole new quadrennial, right? We had a lot of the guys retired after 2008. Yep. They'd been on the team for a while, so... Suddenly, it was me and Malcolm and our coxswain, Brian, who were the only three who returned from the 08 boat to row again in 2012. And even Malcolm didn't row in the 8 right away. He wanted to do a few years in the single and see how he could compete with some of the best individual scullers in the world. So, I was a little bit on my own as far as suddenly from being the junior guy, I was now the senior guy in the boat and the experienced guy. But we had a really good program still. We still had Mike Spracklin as our coach, and just the training environment that he had everybody in was exceptional for producing results in a big boat, especially in the 8. So I was fortunate to have a lot of really new, talented faces alongside me, and eventually Malcolm did come back into the 8 and kind of captained that crew through the lead-up to the 2012 Olympics. And we had an awful race.
Oh, really?
Our first race of the Olympics, we were off the back of the pack by, you know, like 10 seconds. We fell off. We fell apart in the heat. And so fortunately with the progression system that they had in the Olympic Games at that time, we got a second chance. We got to go to that repechage, try and get back on our feet again. And fortunately we did it. We managed to win the rep, make our way into the final, and then had a really tight race for silver.
I mean, I know those were the two you competed in. What was the next step for you kind of after the 2012 experience?
After being on the national team for 7 years and training under Spracklin's program, which is basically as much volume and mileage as the body can handle.
Yeah,
I was fortunate to come away and still be in mostly one piece.
That's a good thing, yeah.
But it's, you know, looking down the pipeline of another 4 years of training, it's a lot of miles and a lot of work. And so I just made the decision that I was ready to move on with my life and get a desk job, a real job, so to speak, and end up meeting my wife out there while I was rowing and started a family and moving on to the next stage of my life.
Outstanding. Were you always an eights guy, or did you do fours or individual ones or pairs or whatever?
Yeah, the training was always in pairs, and that was our philosophy of through the winter. We do a lot of mileage and a lot of head-to-head training against other guys in small boats. Mm-hmm. And then in the summer, we get into the eights for the racing season and dialing it in together. I did have some experience racing in smaller boats at the international level and had some okay results, but I was mostly always an eights guy, interested in that boat, and that's where I've got my gold and silver medal.
Yeah, because Bates has always been an eights program. It was probably when you were here too, right?
Yeah.
Your background kind of lends itself to that?
Yeah, and that's typical of most American universities is about the eights. And I think we have something like four or five various levels of varsity eight right now here at Bates, just with the number of people that are on the team, which is great to see. But it's usually the big boats is what is the focus of American universities, unlike in Canada. In Canada, there's a lot of collegiate focus on rowing in smaller boats. Mm. Pairs and doubles are not uncommon to be included in the university championships.
Were your Canadian teammates ever like, wait, you went to Bates College? Like the small, you didn't go to Cal or?
Oh yeah, they don't even say that. I mean, it's like, I love telling people where I went to college because I'm standing next to five people and it's like, okay, where'd you go to school? Okay, Cal,
right.
Harvard, Cambridge, you know, University of Washington, Bates. Where? Bates College. You know, it's in Maine.
What's their reaction? They're just like, that's unbelievable. Like, I mean, you're the only Olympic gold medalist, I mean, from Bates, right? So it's a pretty cool honor. What are your thoughts on kind of doing that?
Well, they usually ask me where Bates is
first.
I tell them it's a small school in Maine.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, and then they move on to the next guy.
Okay, that's it. That's all we learned.
Yeah. It's great, and it I didn't really get recruited to any of the big schools when I was in high school because I started rowing fairly late in my career, and so I was able to make a decision on where to go based on where I wanted to go and not where I was recruited to go necessarily. So
now we had another men's rower a few years before you, Mike Ferry, I want to say. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Team USA rower. Olympics also. Do you know him at all? Or
I've met him a few times.
A few times. Okay.
He was, I guess,
class 97. I think?
He was to me maybe what I am to the current group,
right? Okay.
Which is a person you know is out there who's had some success, and their name is on a boat in the boathouse.
There you go.
So I did meet him a few times, and it's nice to know that someone has gone that path from the program that you're in. If you're interested in following in that path, someone you can talk to, or at least take confidence in, that the potential is there that an athlete from Bates College rowing could end up on the Olympic team one day.
Great. What are you up to nowadays?
Engineering. I did my engineering degree, and now I design renewable energy systems, heat pumps, and district energy projects to help decarbonize buildings and communities.
Great. How do you think maybe your time at Bates, your education-wise, prepared you for, as you said, the real world after you're done with rowing?
Yeah. Well, I'm an engineer, but I also end up having to write reports and give presentations and meet with people. And so I think, you know, having a well-rounded education from a place like Bates has served me really well on that front, that I can manage along better than the average engineer, right, who gets cliche of being an engineer who can't talk to people, but can do math, complicated math problems.
Right.
I try and be more of a well-rounded engineer.
There you go. And I got to ask you, when we were talking after the Hall of Fame ceremony, what was the experience like to be up on that stage today?
Oh, it was great. It was a great honor. And, you know, to be inducted into this inaugural class with so many other talented and prestigious individuals is awesome. So I really appreciate the honor and want to say thanks to the college and President Jenkins and the nominating committee for including me in this group.
Andrew Burns, gold and silver medalist at the Olympics in men's rowing for Team Canada. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
This Saturday, football, men's soccer, women's soccer, and field hockey all headed to Tufts to take on the Jumbos in what will be a big day for all four teams' spots in the NESCAC standings as we head down the stretch. Plus, the volleyball team is at home Friday and Saturday to host Connecticut College and then Trinity. Find the complete Bates Athletic schedule at GoBatesBobcats.com and join us next week for another episode of the Bates Bobcast. We'll be right back.